This is a Willets Point Shea Stadium bound 7 express train. The next and last stop is Willets Point Shea Stadium.
Yes, it is the Subway to Shea podcast. Anthony Rivera here with you, talking about all the news and happenings surrounding that team from Queens, the New York Mets. Episode 134 from the Subway to Shea studios in my office. A couple of shout outs before we get started. Got to shout out Reese Green and the Baseball Isn't Boring crew. I was a guest on their the Case 4 portion of their podcast, where I had the opportunity to state my case for the 2024 New York Mets. Make sure to check out that episode, which I'm going to leave in the description here of the podcast. You can follow on X at Reese J Green and at BB Isn't Boring. Also, I was on with Keith and Key of the Shea and Sons podcast. We did a 2024 MLB predictions, where we picked the over and unders for each of the 30 teams out there. And you can follow them on X at Kicking It with Keith, at Key_Bully19, and at Shea and Sons. And check out that episode. Also, will be in the description of this podcast. Now, you know, today we had the opportunity to check out the Mets top prospects Friday in the MLB spring breakout game against the Washington Nationals, and it did not disappoint. Here to break down with me and go in depth on the Mets top prospects and the minor league system is Ernest Dove. Ernest, how are you doing today, my friend?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Ernest is baseball reporter and the host of the Mets Minor League Report on sportswireradio.org. You can follow him on Twitter, X, whatever you're calling it these days, at Ernest Dove. And Ernest, let's get right into the MLB spring breakout game between the Mets and the Nationals. You were there. Mets won 4-2 over Washington. And I'm going to go through all the highlights, and then we'll come back, get some of the questions in there and some of the comments on what each player kind of did. So Dom Hamill got the start, 2 innings pitched, 2 hits, 1 run, which was earned, 1 walk and 2 strikeouts. We also got to see Tyler Stewart, Blake Tidwell, Nolan McClain, who we're going to get into today. He threw 10 pitches and 7 were strikes. Brandon Sprout threw 6 pitches and threw 2 strikeouts, and Calvin Ziegler, who also had 2 strikeouts and got the save in the game. You know, you look at the hitting, Ryan Clifford was as advertised, opposite field RBI double, his exit velocity 102.2 miles per hour. For, you know, all the fans that are huge on exit velocity, man, he hit the ball really hard. It was nice to see. Kevin Parada also had an RBI single that tied the game at 2. And then 17-year-old Jeremy Rodriguez, who we got in the Tommy Pham trade, gave the Mets the lead with the RBI single that scored Marco Vargas, who was a part of what trade? The David Robertson trade as well. And Drew Gilbert played, didn't really do much offensively, but defensively, we might have someone that'll be in the outfield for a while for the New York Mets. But let's go back to the top. Let's start off with Dom Hamill, and he seems pretty confident on the field, and even when he talks to the media, do you think we'll see him this year in the big leagues?
Well, that's some of the things I've been talking about, even on social media and a lot of other people. It's kind of like, well, what do you do with a guy like Dominic Hamill? Because here's the thing. The Mets, obviously, everyone's talking about their pitching. Oh, it sucks. It's terrible. And all of this process that even includes Senga now going down. So that technically opens up a spot where the ladder keeps moving up. But when it comes to the minor league system, going into spring, my thought process has been, okay, well, which guys are going to have to repeat a level that don't really necessarily belong back in that level? Now, before, as spring was happening, I was thinking off the top of my head, based on the innings pitch, guys like Tyler Stewart, maybe even Blake Tidwell, could they have to repeat Double-A? But a guy like Dom Hamill, he's pretty much pitched a version of a full season already as far as player development in Double-A. So the question is, what do you want to do with Dom Hamill? How he even looked in the spring breakout kind of looks like Dom Hamill that we've been seeing for a long time. He throws really hard. He gets a lot of strikeouts. And then there's a couple of hits and a walk. So I was trying to think about the consistency with a guy like Dominic Hamill. That's why I was excited about 2024, you know, post pitching lab and everything. How is he going to do? But yeah, out of camp, you would think based on pure player development, he needs to go to Syracuse based on the stuff, regardless of the consistency or inconsistency last year in Double A. But we have to sort out the other guys in the system, the veteran arms. Who's going to, like, at the end of the day, who's going to accept a Syracuse assignment and not try to, like, catch on with another team? So, honestly, off the top of my head, I almost thought he may have to repeat again only because of the Mets' major league situation and how it's going to affect the Syracuse rotation.
It's crazy that, you know, I was told that we didn't have pitching prospects, and you mentioned that right at the top with your answer. You know, but what I saw on Friday was a pretty good crop of pitchers. Tyler Stewart, Blade Tidwell, Nolan McLean, Brandon Sprout, Calvin Zinko. We didn't even see Mike Vassell. We didn't see Christian Scott. Mm-hmm. You know, it sure looks like the pitching is on the rise. Maybe not most of them in the top 10, but they're definitely on the rise in this Mets farm system.
Yeah, that's what's been happening. I mean, my opinion for the last about year or two was that, especially recent, so in the last year, the Mets are, at this point, they're top heavy in upper minors, highly skilled arms. Now, the question is, okay, well, everyone wants to know what's the projectability, who do you comp them? But the biggest question is, okay, Earn, how many of these guys are frontline starters? And as much as my bias and my pro bias, and I'm the prospect hugger and the minor league junkie, but I don't know how many, if any, frontline starters are in the Mets farm system right now. But what's happening is all of these guys are now going to be sitting in Double A, Triple A. So everyone talks about pitching. It's been an issue for the Mets. Even the Mets organization that I've talked to way up the chain, they understand we need to develop pitching. They're honest, or at least behind the scenes to me, right? So we know about how's the player development going to go, but they have plenty of arms. But yeah, I'm probably thinking, to give the numbers out there, that everyone likes numbers and projections, it sounds like if I can name 7 to 8 top pitching prospects off the top of my head, I say all 7 or 8 probably fall under the category of SP3 to SP5, 6. With the ceiling, best case scenario, who could jump into the 2, basically, which would be that version of a frontline starter. And it seems like that guy all of a sudden became Christian Scott in like the last 6 to 8 months, not even a full year. He basically soared over everyone. Because I know before last season started, it was all about Blade Tidwell, and because of the pure stuff that he has in the 97, 98, great slider. And then I became a huge fan, even interviewed Mike Vassell, and I know about the work that he put in the offseason to work on some of his mechanics, lower body movement, trying to maintain his 95-plus velocity. But Christian Scott, all of a sudden, is he the one? I don't want – not about ace-type stuff, but can Christian Scott in the last – 4 to 6 months or at the end of last year, did he turn himself into a frontline starter ceiling? I mean, that could be one of the most exciting things that's come out of, you know, my thought process since the end of last season.
With this pitching here, and, you know, it's always the talk about them being starters. From what you've seen, you know, with the repertoire that these guys possess, are there any of them that you feel could be a legitimately good reliever? I mean, we've seen pitchers come up from the minor leagues, you know, for example, Adam Wainwright comes out and closes, right, for St. Louis, and then gets into the rotation. The Mets never really kind of developed either way, whether they, you know, they take a failed starter, put him in the bullpen, or, you know, opposite way. Do you see any of these guys in playing into any of those type of roles?
I mean, it's tough. You could see it with a lot of guys, and I know one of the issues, and I think honestly, even from top publications down to the bloggers and podcasters, they want to have certain thoughts on it. Sounds like a lot of pitchers in the Mets system, well, we could project them a little bit more as high-end relievers than starters. And that's even from Vassell to Christian Scott before he just towered in the last year. Tyler Stewart, among everyone, they keep calling him a reliever because him and Scott basically were more relievers in college. But of course, there's stories to everything. And Tyler Stewart, just because he pitched as a reliever in college, doesn't necessarily mean he was meant to be a reliever. So even a guy like Tyler Stewart has about 5 pitches in his arsenal. Everyone talks about the 2, the slider, fastball. I actually go a little bit lower. When I try to think of guys, could they possibly be relievers? I'm actually thinking more on the next tier of top prospects in the Mets organization. There's guys like Yoander Suarez. There's Felipe De La Cruz, a lefty who I'm absolutely in love with, who throws upper 90s as a lefty. There's also, I'm trying to think of some of those guys. Could they possibly also be those guys to transition to reliever? As far as the top guys, do they have to be always relievers? Or like a, was it the Urias and the Dodgers some years ago? Yeah. He was very young, but he came up as a reliever to try to eat the innings. Do the Mets want to go that route? Do they go with a Vassell or even rush a Christian Scott somewhere by summer, get them into the major league roster as relievers? I think something like that could be beneficial, but I don't, as of right now, still, I don't really project any of them to have to kind of make that transition full time. I still see all of them with starter ability. But yeah, if you were to tell me that Vassell or Scott or even Tyler Stewart, we're going to call them up as a long man and then kind of see how it goes. Like if you have one of those three be your new Negosic or your new, like, you know, something like that, or can they be like a Trevor Williams and kind of be a hybrid? Maybe we're talking, okay, well, who could be a Trevor Williams type? Maybe that could be Scott, Stewart, Vassell. Can they be called up as rookies and be like a Trevor Williams or a Seth Lugo of sorts, where you always go two innings? But that's rough because Lugo, of course, he got so strong. He was basically a setup man and his own closer. So I just feel like I'm really not too super comfortable calling any of the top prospects, hey, let's, I think they'd be better in the bullpen. But here I am outing myself, calling some of the other guys. And I do like, there's also Jordani Ventura. I love his pure stuff, but in my head, comp or not, I see Ventura as like a Familia. And I see one of those guys with pure filthy stuff. Command has been a struggle all of pro baseball. So can you harness it enough as like a Familia in the pen? So I'm naming all the, like, the second tier guys of sorts. As far as the top guys, I just think every single one of them from Sprout on up, I just think all of them can still maintain the velocity. They have the assortment of pitches. I think they could all still be starters right now as pure projection.
You know, I always hear that like AAA is like just a placeholder. Like the competition is not really there. And you know, the stats probably aren't what you think they are, as if they, you know, from single A to double A. So do you, like, would you keep these guys in double A and then send them up to the major leagues if, you know, the opportunity arose, injury or whatsoever?
I mean, it seems like not a lot of that works out super well, depending on the pitching prospect, depending on their kind of persona and like the stress and the pressure that can go with it. But also, I don't know about this year, but I know in last year, in the last couple of years, my understanding is that literally the baseballs are different from double A to triple A. So I believe from last year, the AAA baseballs are the same baseballs that the major leaguers were using. So every time a guy got called up from AA to AAA, he had some minor issues, especially in the first outing or two, because of the different baseballs. I think there was a different slickness to them. I mean, they're the same size and all that, but there was a certain thing about the slickness and something, a couple of other very, you know, important minute details that actual professional pitchers will tell me about, and it goes over my head. So because of things like that alone, I would be worried about jumping anyone, even specifically with the ball. I mean, it's not a Senga situation from like another league, another country, but it's probably not the best idea regardless. And also, I like the idea of AAA for pitchers just because of things like plate discipline, because the higher you go, the more plate discipline these bats are going to have. You got these 30-year-old guys in AAA. They're going to be letting your slider go, and they're going to let all the pitches kind of that are close, and they can see it better. So the experience factor can do well, but between that and the baseballs itself, I would be worried. Like, hey, let's have a Scott, or let's just jump a Hamill. If he starts off hot in like April, May, and he's just completely dominating regardless of level, I don't know if he would jump from double A to triple A for him.
Like I mentioned earlier, we didn't get to see Vassell or Scott during this game, but they did get to pitch at spring training more towards the beginning. I think they each got an inning to a little inning showcase. What were your thoughts on what you saw from them during that little kind of showcase that we did get from them?
I mean, I'm still excited. I'm excited about the velocity of a lot of guys, because I was hearing even from the offseason, even from the Dominican Summer League all the way up to the minor league stateside, there was a thing about the pitching labs, but there was also a thing about improving command and increasing velocity, which I guess sounds scary too. Even some pitcher was just on social media like, hey man, you're all throwing too hard. So, but the velocities and everything.
Chris Bassett, that was former Met Chris Bassett, let that out.
So it's kind of like, yeah, there's not enough you know, we need more pitchers and there's too many throwers, but hopefully we're getting a combination of things, even through the things like the pitching lab. So Mike Vasa went through the lab. They all went through the lab. And I think one of the things they were working on too was the lower body strength and to maintain that velocity. So guys like Vasil and Scott, they're already throwing really well in camp. And yeah, you got to hope obviously that translates, because those are definitely the two guys I would assume are going to be beginning the minor league seasons in Syracuse. I almost thought Vasil almost would kind of almost make the team. And then when Senga went down, things were getting very interesting. And I started asking a few things around the Mets organization, like, hey, you know, there's a guy down and, you know, I'm the minor league junkie. And it's kind of like, well, to be honest, you know, we're letting some guys know that they better get their reps in, even in camp, because you never know from some of the higher level guys. And should I have an assumption of why guys like Vasil and Scott didn't participate in this game? Are they not that they're going to make the Mets as a team, but there might be certain things going on where they're preparing different guys for different things. So it's pretty honestly exciting to have that form of a minor mystery of certain guys that didn't get put on that breakout squad. And maybe the major league squad or the major league camp, the major league locker room environment, maybe there's a few extra, you know, things in play here. But overall, I was just excited about both of them because I think they're both going to make their debuts one way or another this year.
I'm glad you mentioned the whole thing with the velocity and the speed of these pitchers and what they're getting the pitchers to do nowadays in the lab. But I want to ask you if you're a fan of the lab, because Chris Bassitt said, you know, has some credence, because look, there's just so many injuries now in baseball. In pitching, Gerrit Cole's out, Kodai Senga's out, Lucas Giolito's out for the season. There's a whole bunch of pitchers, you know, top guys that are now injured. Is it the speed of the pitches that's going with the velocity? Is it the new ruling now where they have to hurry up and they don't get that time to get compose themselves when they're on the mound? Like, what is it that's making all these injuries, and how much of a fan of the lab are you?
Well, I did hear the one thing about, hey, the pitch clock, and maybe that's a factor, because again, these guys, when they're just kind of roaming around the mound doing their thing and the batters are readjusting their gloves, like, it's very boring and slow. But from the pitching aspect, you know, hey, maybe there is a bit of a factor to that. Like, okay, I just threw 99 and now I have 15 seconds to throw 99, and then I have to throw that high 90 slider, and then I got to get back to that 99, all in a span of like maybe 60-ish seconds of four pitches. That could possibly be a factor. Now, with me with the pitching lab, I'm trying to understand the differences, because when I first started hearing about pitching labs before the Mets seemed to know it existed, and I know there were those kind of other like outside kind of companies, not through the teams, and it kind of seemed like some of them, if you kind of jump into some of these videos, you see those guys, like, they're doing like a shot put with their hand. They're not on a mound pitching. You see those guys like run and throw into a wall, and they have some system to try to build your arm strength or velocity. That is something that maybe that could be a bit of an issue, but I don't know. I'm no expert whatsoever. My thought process on the pitching lab, because the things that I was hearing about the pitching lab, it's like, yeah, you get into your underwear, you have a bunch of stuff all over your body, they have plates on the mound. But for me, my understanding was when you throw your assortment of 15, 20, 25 pitches, it's more about the data that pumps out. And they use some of the information not only to tell you about your pitches, but also to maybe teach you another pitch based on certain grips, change your grip. But then they were also saying, even through your nutritionist and your training for the off season, some of it was information based off the pitching lab. So for me, it really wasn't about, oh, I want you in the lab to go up 3 miles per hour. I think it was also, in my understanding, it's about other factors and other things, from nutrition, body mechanics, body movement. You know, obviously, like, the king of everything, DeGrom, every release point is exactly the same. But when they try to work on other things besides just throw hard, my understanding is more the training aspect and what to work on from the results, more than just you're going to throw harder now because here's what it says.
Yeah, we got to see a little bit of that with Sean Manaea and his work in the pitching lab. Also, Luis Severino was posting his videos of him in the pitching lab throwing all his different pitches in different ways. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see. We'll see it firsthand, because a couple of these pitchers have already, you know, been in the lab. A couple of the, what I like to say, the ifs in the rotation, if they can turn it back, if they can turn back time and be the pitchers that they once were, we'll see that. We're going to get into the hitting as we go on with the prospects and what happened during the game. I talked about Ryan Clifford, that opposite field double, RBI double, man. He smacked the crap out of that ball. I don't think I heard a ball hit that hard all day there. And we know he can hit. We know Clifford can hit. But, you know, where is Ryan Clifford best suited for on the field, especially – you know, if the New York Mets re-sign Pete Alonso, because I know he could play first base. I know he plays some outfield. So where do you think he's best suited, you know, if the Mets re-sign Pete Alonso?
Well, that's why it's kind of funny. Like some of the – pretty much all of the Mets' top prospects from like 1 to 5 were trying to figure out how they would even play a position in the majors anyway. Because it's kind of like, you know, there's no comps, but the competitions is kind of weird. And I know with Ryan Clifford, the big red dog, we were all calling him the whole game. My understanding is that he has a cannon. So he has the arm for corner outfield. That's fine. But yeah, the issue is, you know, what kind of outfielder overall is he going to be out there? And obviously, even in a little spring breakout game, they have him at, you know, first base. So it almost seems like you don't want to just project it based off small things, but you have to kind of go that route with a guy like this. And I'm not going to call him a Vientos of sorts where, you know, it has to be a first baseman DH already, because Ryan Clifford is still 20 years old, I believe. I'm not sure when he turns 21. So he's going to be, he's going to turn 21 in July. So he's going to be 20 years old into the start of the summer. So for a 20-year-old to be like, well, he's going to have to be a DH or a first baseman because we feel his defense won't hack it. I mean, hey, tell that to like JD Davis, who all of a sudden became a pretty decent third baseman out of nowhere with some analytics and another team. But that's the thing. So Ryan Clifford, absolute best case scenario. He's hitting 30 bombs in like AAA in a year or two. You know, but what do you do? Do you drop Pete Alonso and say, don't worry, everyone, we have a top prospect who's going to start next year and he's 21, 22. That's probably not going to make a lot of people happy. And I can't sit here as the minor league guy and say, you know what? I project Ryan Clifford to come up and basically have a Pete Alonso rookie season. I can't say that, but it does, reading between the lines online and social media, it kind of seems like he may have to have that fallback option of first base. So, and what are you going to do? Platoon him with some guy? I mean, he's going to have to be an everyday player the way he's being projected out.
Yeah, even with the power that he has, I find it really hard replacing the production that Pete has given year in, year out, even if he can hit 30 bombs a year. You know, I feel like Pete's offense, obviously the average is not there, but, you know, the run production, the home runs, that's like generational talent. I feel like that's hard to kind of replicate. And I would feel bad for the kid if he was put in that position, because you already know, you know, if Pete leaves, they put Ryan Clifford at first, the pressure is on from day one. Even worse than what we're going to see with Mark Vientos, what we're seeing with Brett Beatty, I think that the pressure will be, you know, even worse for him. Do you feel that, you know, the Mets really made out well in that trade for Justin Verlander when they got Clifford and Gilbert? A lot of the more talk was about Gilbert, and he's higher in the rankings right now, but is Clifford the prize of that trade?
Well, even after, within a few weeks or within the week after that trade, there was some chattering even online that, like, hey, some of the bigger publications, they were mentioning, you know what, Clifford might be the better prospect in this deal based on the ceiling alone. It's kind of, you get pigeonholed sometimes, especially when you're an amateur athlete, then you get to the pros for a couple of years. You still kind of get stuck in a little thing sometimes. And it kind of sounds like they use the terms like high floor and stuff. And it's almost coming to the point of Drew Gilbert having a really nice floor. And then it's more about Ryan Clifford has the ceiling. And maybe it seems like that's the direction that even these two guys are going, where it's like, hey, Drew Gilbert. I remember in my own version of it, there was Rosario and then there was Jimenez. And for me, it was kind of like, I always felt Andrés Giménez had the higher kind of floor. And then I thought the higher ceiling went to Rosario based on pure tools. And it's kind of a different, you know, different meshing of players. But I think we're falling into that mode again. You got these two high-end prospects. Gilbert, just kind of like, you just want to quietly like plug him in. And then you're more excited about Clifford. But maybe at the end of the day, you might love Drew Gilbert out there with really, really good defense and a very strong arm. And if he's a good average hitter and everything else, all the tools are going to be there. And then Clifford, again, yeah, if he hits like 40 bombs, it changes the dynamic of his entire projections, his entire, you know, status as a minor league or major leaguer to come.
And I mentioned Kevin Parada, and he had a, you know, game-tying single. 2023 stats, he batted 248, 14 home runs, 54 RBI, 752 OPS. And, you know, coming out of the first round pick of that draft, you know, expected a little more from him, not the season that he wanted. You know, what does Kevin Parada have to do to right the ship?
Well, I mean, obviously, first and foremost, you know, sticking at catcher is always going to be important. And we can't just don't even get into Francisco Alvarez. He's an absolute star. So leave that be. So just thinking in Parada in terms of being himself, any kind of future, we'll have to see. But I know last year when I started asking about Parada, I knew he had some leadership qualities. And I know he went on a hot streak. I'm trying to think of the months, somewhere between April, May, June, early June. He was on a hot streak. And I was talking to people internally that were basically saying he's going to be called up soon. And I was like, please tell me so I can announce it. And then as far as from A ball to double A, and he was basically right there. And then what happens? The baseball gods have spoken. He hits the IL, and then the whole thing from when he gets back. I'm not saying an injury is the reason for his entire season, because yeah, the batting average was low. A lot of the numbers were low. The power was pretty good. The home run power was fine for your home runs to at bats. So, I mean, he was looking good, especially from the catcher position. But I know it was like Babe Ruth in college, so everyone wanted to see the guy just show up immediately in the next kind of first full season and probably like, well, we need you to hit like 25 home runs to show us your worth. It didn't happen. But again, there was that kind of injury that slowed things down in his development. And I know the throwing kind of issues. Do you blame his throwing? Do you blame his pop time? Do you even blame the minor league pitchers for throwing too slow? I mean, we can get into this forever. But you know what? For Kevin Parada, first things first, he has to hit. That's why I was just happy for the hit in the game. He's going to have to hit. He's going to be one of those guys where I think batting average, the archaic batting average, it's going to be important for a guy like this to do both. Hit a little bit over 250, and he's got to hit the bombs now, because low A and high A, it's not that easy to hit home runs. The parks are terrible in Florida as far as how big they are. The weather is super hot. And I heard in Brooklyn, the wind can be swirling, even the league itself in low A and high A. Double A is when you want to see Parada be that guy. Is he going to hit 20 plus home runs in double A? That's what I'm looking for. I need him to be over 20.
Hopefully he takes another step here, because there was all the talk about him coming up and why did they draft another catcher? Because you got Francisco Alvarez, and you know, the Mets can't just have, they got to not only draft by position, but draft by who was the best in that round. And yeah, they seem to have done that, you know, with Parada. Just growing pains. Hopefully he can overcome them and we'll see a better Parada this season. You know, we talked about how important the Verlander trade was last year, but there was other trades, even smaller ones. The Tommy Pham trade that brought in Jeremy Rodriguez, who had the game-winning home run. He's only 17 years old. You got Marco Vargas, who's in the David Robertson. He's only 18 years old. What are your thoughts on these two?
Well, of course, Jeremy Rodriguez, one of the most famous names that was ever created last year on Mets Twitter. I was trying to be part of that hype. Because again, he basically had kind of good stats with the prior organization, was Arizona. And then he comes to the Mets, goes on their DSL squad, and he's basically Babe Ruth. He's just Barry Bonds that he was through the end of last season. It was absolutely insane. So it's hard to even get into the numbers with Jeremy Rodriguez, but he kind of looks the part. I love the flair. He looks like he has that Lindor flair.
Yeah.
Even some Rosario flair from Rosario a few years ago. I love the flair that he's got. I think the defense is going to be good. He did have a hit. I can't remember if he had a hit off that guy who was throwing 100. So this 17-year-old kid hitting the ball 100 miles an hour and he gets a base hit. That was incredible to see. And I know he was among the top of his IFA class. So it's not like that, you know, you get this lottery ticket kid, but he was a lottery ticket that came kind of high bonus, highly ranked when he came into pro baseball. So it was kind of amazing to even get him in a trade like this for Pham. So shout out to the Mets, obviously, with the different front offices for even coming across someone like that. So that was pretty exciting to see for him. And who else was it?
We have Marco Vargas.
I love the walks. Spring breakout, 2 walks. That's exactly what I wanted from Marco Vargas, considering what I heard about him early on. So we have a teenager. You got teenagers like Marco Vargas. Then you have Jet Williams, Jacob Reimer, who, by the way, is a third baseman. Hey, maybe in like 2-3 years, we could stop arguing over third base.
Yeah.
But you've got these like three teenagers or 18 to 19-ish, 20-year-olds who have really good plate discipline. And even the catcher they got from the Marlins, Ronald Hernandez, another guy who I think had more walks than strikeouts last season. So that's why I was excited too about Marco Vargas, because to me that was as advertised, because he came up there and wasn't even swinging in a showcase game like this. He takes two walks. I kind of love it the way I kind of watch the game and see it happen.
You know, Drew Gilbert didn't get to really show his offense, but he did show some defense in right field with a cannon for an arm. I'm liking what I'm seeing, and you know, I really think that maybe at some point this year, especially if the DH position struggles with Mark Vientos, that if we see Starling Marte, who they say is going to get some time at DH, if he moves to DH and the Mets bring up Drew Gilbert to play right field.
Well, I mean, we have to think about the reality of things. We could knock on wood all day long, but the entire Mets outfield is Nimmo, Marte, and Bader. And we can say a lot health-wise about all three guys. Mm-hmm. So you have Taylor as like a fourth outfielder who's been really great in spring. Now I love the value of him on the bench. But for a guy that's going to may have to play every day, even for a brief IL stints or not, you kind of think Drew Gilbert is probably going to show up pretty soon. And the good news is that as far as I can see, he can probably play all three outfield positions. So between him being able to play all three, you have McNeil, hopefully get healthy McNeil. If he can be out there as a backup option in the corner outfield, he can create a lot of really good opportunities and good options. Because I do see guys like Vassell as a pitcher and Drew Gilbert as a hitter. I just feel like we may see them sooner rather than later.
Yeah, you know, especially with the way that this team has, you know, suffered injuries throughout the last couple of years, to have that depth through the minors is very important. And it finally seems like, you know, we're going to get to see some of these players that have been talked about through the MLB pipeline. You have the Joe DeMails yourself. You know, we're going to get to see all of these, you know, players at some point. A couple of them this year would be definitely very nice. Is there anyone or anything that I may have missed from this game that you'd like to point out or touch on?
I mean, there was some guys that I always like, certain guys. I like Rylan Thomas. He's like the diminutive lefty who also got a hit off a guy throwing like 101. I think it was 101 mile an hour pitch, and he hit one oppo and got a single. I see him as like a Luis Guillorme, which may probably freak people out offensively. But I think he's like that kind of like that slap hitter that's going to get you the walks, and he's going to put the ball somewhere on the left side of the field as a lefty. He's going to hit it oppo. I like seeing him in the game. There's a young catcher, because you could never have enough catchers. There was a young Vincent Peroso in that game who had a single, and he'll be 21 all year. He's a lefty bat as a catcher. He's going to take a while. So I guess if you're thinking majors, you may have to wait about 2-3 years to see how he's going to do. The really young guys like Colin Houck, the recent draft pick, the top draft pick, he did look pretty good. He's only a teenager. I'm glad he was out there. One of my favorites is a middle infielder, Jesus Baez, he's like the little Tommy Pham as far as exit velocity. So he's like that Soup Campbell kind of guy. He hits it hard. And I know last year, even in this game, he hit one over 100 miles an hour right at somebody. And even somebody that was with me was like, that just sums up Jesus Baez, his entire 2023 season, hitting it over 100 right at someone. Those are some of the other young guys, and they're all of different ages, low A to high A to double A, triple A. Can you believe the Mets are kind of this stacked of sorts from all the different affiliates? And they have a lot of guys playing the same position, so competition's going to be tight. I have no idea where some of these guys are going to play defensively, because there's too many middle infielders. There's going to be guys playing third base. You may have middle infielders playing first or DH in the low minors. You can't even fit them all, which is technically a good sign for the Mets.
Yeah, even Steve Cohen mentioned it during the presser, and I want to get into that. He says, you saw this game the other day, and for the first time, I'm excited about, you know, what we're building in this farm system. We hadn't developed pitching in a long time, and for the first time, it looks like we have depth down there. We have 6, 7, 8 pitchers that could potentially be next starters, and to me, that's exciting because pitching is so freaking expensive in baseball today. If we can start building a team where we have some young, fresh blood, and then surround it with veteran talent, that's a winning combination. When that list was released, that lineup, the whole roster, and man, I was thinking, you know, this is a nice group here. You know, they may not be the top guys just yet, but these are the guys that we've been hearing about. These are the ones that we've been wanting to see play, and I hope that they do this every year, where we get to see this spring breakout from now on. Because you know, a lot of people don't get to watch the minor league games. We just hear through it, you know, from yourself and you know, Joe DeMays, like I mentioned before. So we don't get to see this, and to get to see a game like this, I thought was a nice touch by MLB to promote not only the minor leagues, but to, you know, to promote it through Major League Baseball. Cohen also mentioned we're following a plan, and we've been very clear about our plan. We want to play our younger players and find out what we have, and I fully expect that's the way it's going to go. I got to give them kudos for Stearns and Cohen to be sticking to this plan. You know, we've heard a lot from the fans and their feeling towards DH and the starting rotation and signing free agents. So for the Mets to keep sticking with this, I think it's the right way to go this time around.
I mean, you know, I also believe that as well. I mean, everyone's kind of mad because, okay, Cohen took over. He's the richest guy in baseball. He's just going to do everything he can. And then he did. And they had the highest payroll that was ever the highest payroll in the history of payrolls. And they lost last year. So, well, hey, do it again. You got money. Why do you care? It's not yours. I mean, I get it, but they did win 101 games. They tried to kind of double up on it. They tried to exchange one veteran for another, and they gave them the highest money ever in an AAV. It didn't work. So they tried to buy that title window that was in there with like DeGrom and Scherzer, and then they tried to replace with Verlander. They tried to go for it for one or two years and win it all with what they have and no farm system. And then it didn't work. So, you know what? Here's the strategy. Let's not trade everyone like the Jeff Wilpon era, and we're going to just trade 20 guys in 2 years with Brody and Jeff. And it now is what they had to, you know, kind of come up with was, can we take a breather? It doesn't have to be a rebuild. They don't have to win 50 games to prove themselves. They still have a bunch of stars on the team. So now you're in that weird mix of anywhere from, I don't know, 75 to 85 wins, depending on who's hurt, who's healthy. And then maybe mix in a guy like Drew Gilbert, mix in some guy who comes out of nowhere, a Vassell or a Scott. Maybe they show up firing and they're like rookie of the year candidate. If you have that, then you have a trade deadline and you have a little bit of health. Maybe you get 85, 86. I have no idea how many wins they're going to get, but I feel the opportunities are there. And then once the dead money's gone after this year, I guess it also depends on Verlander, how many innings he pitches for some of his final year of money next year. But max money off the books, McCann money. Yep, they're paying McCann. McCann money's off the books after this year. So that's why you start hearing the things again about Soto and whoever, or at least, you know, re-signing Alonso. I like what they're doing. And again, Mets fans, you don't have to think of this as, it's a rebuild. Let's get the number one pick. I just don't think that's realistic and it's not going to happen. I think they have too much talent.
And the baseball draft is so much different than other sports, where the getting to the big game is a lot easier. Hockey, with like the first 10 picks of the draft, you know, you got basketball and football, where it's a little easier to make the roster. You know, when you get drafted in baseball, there's still the sit, right? You're going to start at single A, you're going to work your way up. And that's pretty much, you know, how it goes. Maybe your route is faster than a lot of others, but it just seems that way. You know, with Cohen mentioning, you know, letting the younger players play, you know, we'll wrap up the show, you know, talking about, you know, a couple of these, I guess, fringe players on the opening day rosters, four of them that I wanted to talk about. Three of them I'm definitely certain are going to make this roster. And that is Brett Beatty, Mark Vientos, and Tyler McGill. The other guy I want to talk about is Jose Buto. But you know, starting off with Brett Beatty, had a tough season last year, has not really kind of grabbed hold of third base during spring this year. He's batting .237, has one home run, three RBIs, 635 OPS. You know, you don't really put that much into spring, but, you know, he has a lot to prove with Brett Beatty. Something that I've thought about throughout all of last year was the fact that he didn't make the roster out of spring training when I thought he tore the ball up during spring training last year, and they decided to go with Eduardo Escobar anyway. Did not making that team out of spring training affect him mentally? And I feel like he just wasn't the same again.
Well, that's the tough part too. Like when he first came up, there are people that all felt it was rushed. So in the beginning, originally, he was kind of rushed. And then there was kind of the mental aspect of the game. Like, there were people trying to float rumors out there. Well, maybe it's kind of getting to him in the New York spotlight and everything else. So maybe that was a bit of a factor. Because this is a guy who came up as, like, drafted a little bit older of sorts out of high school. He was supposed to have all the natural power. So you figured he was going to hit bombs, like, all the way up the levels. And like I said, low A, high A, the home runs are not really going to come. So when he got to double A, he had those spurts where the home runs finally started coming for him. And I was like, oh, okay, now he's on track. But then he gets called up a little bit early, and he just seemed like things completely fell apart for him during his first go around. So yeah, I mean, coming back, then again, like I said, the Mets were still trying to, like, buy themselves into that title window. So you want to go with the veteran guy, because you have a guy like that. He got rushed, he struggled, and he's going to completely dominate AAA. That's why you have that quad A term that even the players, they kind of hate it. They don't want to be called fillers. They don't want to be called quad A guys. So now you're in the situation, Beatty and Vientos are basically Barry Bonds in AAA. So what do you want to do? He sucks. I know, but he hits like 350 in AAA. So we have to figure something out. So he's still with the organization. And I think the defense could be okay. I never thought of him as an above average defender, neither one. So I do admit that from hearing information from day one, from low minors to AA, AAA. So but Beatty, I kind of thought he would put up better numbers. But I feel they were going to go for the title, so that's different for last year. But I just think this has to be the year, one way or another. No pressure on me, but I think this is the one and done kind of year for these two guys because of what we've been talking about. There's just so many guys coming up the pipeline right now that are now AA, AAA. So there's even guys getting lost in the mix. Like, shout out Carlos Cortez, who's having a good spring in his small at-bats that he's gotten into the games. And then you have these little tiny guys like Rylan Thomas, who's kind of good. He's going to be an upper minors guy. There was a guy named, they have a Rowdy Jordan and Matt Rudick, kind of like completely way beyond the top 30, kind of under the radar outfielders, but they have a lot of talent as well. And Rudick got hurt last year. So there's guys that are kind of there, like waiting in the wings of sorts. And my joke about Jacob Reimer, who's still, I think, a teenager, 19, 20. So he may take more time at third base, but it's good to develop. Player development is really important. The Mets need to figure this out. They haven't been developing pitchers, but even on the hitting wise, you want to see even more improvement from Francisco Alvarez. And then can one of Beatty, Vientos, and please, Lord, bring back Mauricio. Can at least, like, one of those three be standard core 26-man players for the Mets for the next 5 to 6 years? That would be a good thing to hope for. Don't cancel the season for this year, but can we also develop someone, please?
Yeah, that has been one of my concerns. I feel like the Mets have drafted well, and we always hear about how well they drafted. It's now the process after that into developing in these players to be major leaguers that the Mets have had a problem with. And that's why they brought in, you know, a David Stearns, and I can't remember the guy's name from Houston, but they brought in a guy from Houston to be a part of the front office and player development that had a really great track record with the Astros, compared to the Mets, who are really low on player development. So, you know, I hope that this kind of turns the corner for them on that route. And I know Vientos and I know Beatty, they're still young. They don't have a full season's worth of at-bats, but I'm in agreement with you. If they don't get it this year, I don't know how much more time they get at all.
Yeah, I don't. Like me, I was the defender of Dom Smith until the bitter end. And I know, again, last season, Dom Smith, you check the numbers, he had over 550 at-bats, I believe. So he got a shot. And I'm not saying to just waste the shot. I get it. I'd rather have J.D. Martinez. I'd rather have Snell. I'd rather have Montgomery. I know. Add all three of them. Let's have a 500 mil payroll because Uncle Steve can afford it. I understand what you're saying, and I'm not even trying to be condescending to anyone. I'm just saying that, like, I know there are guys that would be an upgrade over Beatty and Vientos in the year 2024. I get it. But then, like we just saw last year, and if they get hurt or if they regress, LOL Mets, and nothing's changed other than we have less prospects again because you gave up on more guys. And then the next joke will be if they go to another team and they become okay, then LOL Mets. Here's the guy every day on SportsCenter, like, getting going 2 for 4 with a home run. I'm not saying they're going to do that, but at least can we give a couple of former top 100 prospects a chance, please?
Yeah, I think that the fact that the Mets have kind of tempered expectations through David Stearns and through Steve Cohen, through their pressers, I think that has kind of calmed some Mets fans. Obviously, there are going to be the ones, like you said, I want Jordan Montgomery. I take him. But I do know it, the fact that if you give him a contract, you could pretty much double it because you're going to have to pay, you know, the luxury tax, which is almost double. You know, I can only hope that Mark Vientos can at the very least provide what Daniel Vogelbach and J.D. Davis couldn't at DH. A little more power, a little more run production, because we just weren't getting... J.D. Davis had his spurts, but as soon as he kind of got that control of that role, he just couldn't take it. I think he was like... In one season, 0-10 with 10 strikeouts with the bases loaded. I mean, you got to get some better production there. And I'm hoping with Vientos, you know, finally getting this opportunity that he didn't get last year and the year before, that maybe we can get through to him.
I mean, you hope so. Again, major leagues is a whole different story. My information all these years on Vientos is that, yeah, defensively, it kind of is what it is. Offensively, every time he went up to a level, he struggled mightily at the beginning. You go to his MILB page, it's going to be the same. Every time he went to a new level, he's hitting a .190 for like a month. So he had to adjust. But when he gets called up to the majors with the Mets, he plays here, he plays there, he starts, then he's off for 3 days, and then he starts, and then the consistency wasn't there. Even if it's deserved or not deserved, the guy needs at-bats or he needs another organization. So that's been my kind of thought process, even him more than Beatty, because Beatty, I really thought he would be an average guy, thought he would be a 275-plus guy with an on-base percentage, hit 18-plus home runs, pure power.
The ball to all over the field, but like it did in AAA.
Everyone's been saying a lot of that spraying the ball is on the ground. So Vientos is up, but what's the K rate going to look like? If Vientos has 600 at-bats, how many Ks is he going to have? But is he going to have 25 home runs to go with the Ks? That would be one of the best DHs we've ever had in its history if he can get 25 home runs, no matter what his batting average is.
Now, as we go to pitching here with Tyler McGill, I want to get into Jose Buto. Both have had a pretty good spring. Iffy start last outing for Tyler McGill. I know last season for him, 9-8, 4.70 ERA. In 126 innings pitched. Buto was a 1-4, 3.64 ERA in 42 innings pitched. But I really like what I saw from them. And I know a lot of people don't put so much on September, but these guys, I thought that they gave the most quality starts. I mean, I was at Citi Field for most of these games. I mean, I feel like in my 20 game package, I might've seen Tyler McGill pitch 6 or 7 times. Mm-hmm. And towards the end, he pitched very well. Nice to see Jose Buto as well. You know, what are your thoughts with Tyler McGill? And if he can finally cement himself as a, you know, back end of the rotation guy, so maybe the Mets don't have to spend next year so crazily on pitching and bring in some offense and maybe throw him in the number 5 slot. And let's go with that first, and then I'll get to my Jose Buto question.
Well, I guess the big thing with Tyler McGill is what his new pitch, that it's not the fork ball, but it's his own version of a fork ball. So I think with a new pitch and with just please being healthy, what is the sky's the limit possibility for a guy like Tyler McGill? Although it's kind of funny, we were talking about at the beginning of the show, like who would be great as a reliever? In my mind, I'm kind of thinking it didn't work for him in brief spurts, but with the mentality and the calmness yet fierceness that McGill has, he might actually become like a lights out reliever as a backup plan down the road. But for right now, with pure health and his new pitch, he's one of those guys that you really want to give him that shot right now because of the pure talent that he's always had. I mean, hey, the last time he pitched opening day, the Mets won 101 games, right? I mean, that's my ongoing joke for a few months now. So I still like the idea of him. And then Jose Buto is a guy I've known since like 2019. I've been hyping him forever. There were teammates that were saying Jose Buto has the filthiest stuff in our entire league. And that was a fellow pitcher, not even just anyone. Another guy who pitches in the same rotation was saying, dude, everyone's afraid of him. His stuff is absolutely filthy. For some reason last year, I think hopefully it was an anomaly, he had command issues last year. And I even talked to somebody in the Mets organization. They're like, he's got to tighten that up because they really like his stuff. But last year's command just didn't make sense. If you go to his pro career, it was never really that bad. So I want to see if he tightens up the command. So again, McGill with his new pitch and health, Jose Buto, he has the fastball that can touch up to 96, maybe even 97. He's got that major league changeup. He's had the major league changeup for like 4 years. So we already knew that. If he can improve his command, and then McGill has his health in his pitch, it would be pretty exciting to see, because they're going to get into games, of course, as well in 2024. And then even thinking ahead into next year, I'm talking about all these guys that might be mid to back end guys. There's going to be even more ton of competition going into next year. But I think 2024, McGill and Buto might surprise some people just with pure health and then the command for Buto.
Yeah, if both of these two, you know, can provide what they've been doing in the spring and what they did towards the end of last year, I think it really does help for the Mets not having to, like I said, go into deep free agency like they kind of did this year. They had to, and it's more, you know, minor mid-tier starters, but not have to, you know, spend so much on bringing in pitching here and can focus on if they want to bring back Pete or go after Juan Soto, and maybe they bring in one starter, a top, you know, top guy like a Corbin Burns or something like that. But they have the depth here with Buto, with McGill, with the kids coming up soon. Also Joey Lucchese, who has, you know, hasn't even, you know, scratched the surface just yet, to if we'll see him this year. I know he was having arm issues, so they sent him down. But I posted this on Twitter that, you know, it could Jose Buto kind of be like that diamond in the rough that we weren't even thinking of?
I mean, it would be a good surprise. It would be like a nice McGill surprise for that brief spurts when he came up and everyone was excited. I mean, it's what you want to see. And even like you said, too, like even in the future going into next year, hey, maybe if you have like a Burnsenga and then the other three guys, 3 to 5 or 6 based on depth, if those are all farm system top prospects, now we're talking, because that's going to look pretty good. You have your frontline guys, then you have top prospects in the majors now with like competing for rookie of the year. And then if you're even 2-3 depth guys in AAA are ranked in the top 30 in your system, now you're creating that form of sustainability that Cohen and Stearns are trying to preach.
Big shout out to Ernest for doing this and coming on with me. I know we've been in contact over the last couple of weeks of trying to get something going here. So I'm very happy that we kind of did this right as the spring breakout game, you know, came and went. You got to be in attendance and you know, be a part of that whole situation. So Ernest, I really appreciate you coming on. Let everyone know what you're working on and what you got coming up, and you know, reiterate how they can interact with you as well.
Yeah, the same thing. Continue to try to follow me on the Twitter X under the same name, Ernest Dove. Same with YouTube. If you search Ernest Dove, you'll see some videos of me doing some player interviews, and you'd be on the lookout for more interviews. I have a few guys already lined up. I'm going to try to have even more and more going on as the kind of the months go on during the season. You could also see me, some of the shows that I do and the segments are also part of Sports Wire Radio. So that's SPORTZ, wireradio.org. And also, if you, for some print, once in a while, I try to put pen to paper, aka type on a laptop, for maxmets.blogspot.com. Follow those guys every day. They write a whole bunch of articles on the Major League Mets all the way down to the DSL and all the minor league affiliates. And yeah, obviously, just continue to support all Mets content. We all try to do our best to provide as much information as possible. Obviously, I try to gear all my stuff more towards the minor leagues. I do have media credentials again for the 2024 season for the St. Lucie Mets, since I live in South Florida. So that's the one I can go to. And that's my media credentials. So look on my YouTube channel as well during the year. I'll try to do some highlights, videos, and a lot of St. Lucie Mets stuff, as well as all the other affiliates and the players.
Ernst, like I said, I can't thank you enough for coming on. We got to try to get you on probably during the season for the St. Lucie Mets, just see how everyone's doing down there, you know, how the prospects are developing. So we'll definitely try to do that. I really appreciate your time, and I hope you have a good night.
Thank you, man. Have a good night, everyone.
All right, Ernest Dove, baseball reporter and host of the Mets Minor League Report on sportswireradio.org. That's sports with a Z. Don't forget to put that and follow Ernest on Twitter, X at Ernest Dove. That wraps it up here for the Subway to Shea podcast. I appreciate everyone who came on here. Please hit that subscribe button. Please like the video. If you missed some of it, you can go back and watch it again. This will also be on audio format at some point tomorrow, so you can check that out as well. Ernest was great. He's got great information, and you know, I look forward to more of bringing him on this show. That wraps up Subway to Shea. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, on Instagram, on TikTok, for as long as TikTok is around, at Subway to Shea. Listen, subscribe to the Subway to Shea podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Like we've already mentioned, watch, subscribe on YouTube. If you enjoyed this episode and enjoy Subway to Shea in general, leave a review. Give me 5 stars. Hit a like button. We just keep liking the page. That helps out a lot. And you know, with that said, I can't thank you enough for tuning in and helping my podcast grow. It's a pleasure sharing this content with you every week. You can continue to be a part of the success of the Subway to Shea brand, and I can't appreciate all of you guys enough. So for Anthony Rivera, this is the Subway to Shea podcast. Always remember and never forget, let's go Mets.